You might think you've been deceived. You haven't. The real ones fight to meet. The watered down, the one you know, was made of centuries years ago. The maiden laughed or whacked horny. Missed it. Blasted history. Twisted fiction. Sick addiction. Look at her own show.
Is that me?
Good evening, everybody. Thank you all. I'm very thankful that you all are tuning in for the fourth ever episode of the Sonic Opus.
It'll only be four once.
Oh, yes, that's a good point. I suppose so. My name is Kieran Newton.
Dakota Lopez.
And I'm Anthony Gunch.
And... I don't really know. I like saying our names at the beginning. I don't think it's necessary, but God save me, it's fun. So we have a great show for you guys tonight. Really, really interesting stuff. There was some great releases this week that we're going to be talking about. A little bit different. We are actually not doing the song analysis this time around. Partly because 10 minutes ago, Dakota and I were sitting here. Well, Anthony was there too, but he never talks. We were like, wait, what are we going to do for the song analysis? Crap. And anyways, we have the last album that we are reviewing is going to be quite a long review because it's so great and there's so much to talk about in it. So, Jet's just a little bit different. We're still going to have the Records of Remembrance. This is the fourth one. We only got one more to go after tonight. Before we get started on the history section, and this week I am covering high medieval music.
And before we start talking about high medieval music, we have some personal news that are not necessarily news, but something we'd like to... tell everyone. We've just started our donation box on both our website at sonic-opus.blogspot.com and on our Facebook page as a button. So if you would like to contribute to our free podcast, please do.
Yeah, that would definitely help us out with our ad campaign. We're trying to get ourselves known to everybody, so, you know, it's not mandatory. You don't have to pay for the podcast. It just helps us out to get us known.
Of course.
Give us a little head start.
Yeah, this week I put some money into an account just so that the ad for Sonic Opus would start popping up on Facebook, just to see if we got any hits, see if we got any more listeners. And it's been working pretty well.
Yeah, I'd say a good four people a day on average that we have no contact with.
Yeah, that's which is good. Fantastic. It's really, really great. And even if you guys don't donate, I mean, of course, we would love for you guys to donate just because, I mean, there are certain costs that come with running a music podcast.
Yeah.
Just let us know how you like it.
Yeah, exactly. And also tell your friends. I mean, we're trying to increase our play, our audience by doing an ad campaign, but you guys can all do your part. Just if somebody you know like really likes music or maybe doesn't know a lot of music and they want to find out more, I mean, send them to us, because that's kind of what we're here for. We are your musical senseis, I suppose. Alrighty. So.
High medieval music.
This is not the medieval period that was flying on crystal.
What does that even
mean? Not at all.
Okay. Oh, I get it. Hi.
God, that was really bad. I'm sorry. Okay. This is a pretty short section this week. Anyways, the high medieval music period is essentially everything from 1150 to 1300 AD. And the main basis for this period, and the reason that it is different from the early medieval period and also the late medieval music period, is that this is where the Notre Dame School of Polyphony started up. From around 1150 to 1250, the improvements in music and the way that we see music were being advanced at the same time as the Gothic architecture, if you've ever seen Gothic architecture and stuff like that, same time period, same general thought process going into both of these types of arts. And so in the Notre Dame School of Polyphony, this essentially represents the beginning of what is known as Ars Antiqua. And this is a period in which rhythmic notation first appears in Western music. So for those of you who don't read music, or just even if you do, and well, I don't know why you need to know this if you do, but rhythmic notation, there's the notes, there's the actual pitch of each note, but there's also the rhythm. For example, like standard rock songs, and most songs today are written in 4-4, which means there are four beats per measure, and they are like each like a quarter of a beat long. Every waltz is written in 3-4 time, where the notes are the standard note is a quarter note, but there's only three beats per bar. So like, yeah, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, and it's a very different sound. And up until this point, that really hadn't been thought about, like, at all. Along with the rhythm, there was a lot of formal structure that developed, and texture. There were several new music forms created. Clausole, where certain sections of the organa, which we talked about last week,
mm-hmm.
I'd really rather not go into it again, but
please
go and listen to podcast 3. These certain sections were taken out and fitted with new words and more musical elaboration. The conductus, which was a song for one or more voices to be sung rhythmically. Because before, it was essentially just notes, and you could choose the rhythm and the tempo and all of that. And this was the first regimenting of the rhythm. And tropes, which were just additions of new words and sometimes new music. And all of these just further elaborated the chant. Last week, the main section in the early medieval music is the Gregorian chant. And so all of this was experimenting with the chant, saying, okay, how can we make this better? How can we make this different and intriguing?
Polyphony.
It's been around for a couple of... Did you just whisper intriguing?
I said polyphony.
I thought you were like, I'm like, intriguing, and I hear... Never mind. In the Ars Antiqua period, the motet, which was one of the most important musical forms of the High Middle Ages, was developed. It was developed out of the clausula, which was the melismatic sections of organa, which were extracted and fitted with new words. My notes are so bad this week. I'm sorry.
I forgive you.
It was just... Oh, and thank you. You're so kind. And so these little clausulae, which were just little pieces, began to be performed independently. And so when they were done like that, those became the motet. When troped, and so using another form, changing out words, with non-liturgical words, so non-standardized chant words. And so these became a form of like elaboration and sophistication, and there's a lot of more subtlety in the music, and especially and in the chant. And that is even more talked about in the section next week, called the Ars Nova, which is the period that follows the Ars Antiqua.
Ars Nova just sounds so much more cool.
I gotta admit, it does. What is our fascination with the word nova? I just don't get it. It's very strange.
It just means new, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it means new.
Nueva.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So yeah, what you were talking about, that was pretty interesting.
Thank you.
I think Anthony just woke up for a split second and then went back to sleep.
Okay, we'll get him some juice a little bit later so that he can, so that he's ready to go. Anyways, the second section, this is pretty short. Last week I talked about the beginning of the troubadour and trouvère tradition. Dits with the Goliards started, and I talked about that last week. And so the troubadours and the trouvères were essentially, it was a tradition of monophonics, just single note, secular song, usually accompanied by instruments. And so, like anything you've heard about, you know, troubadours, traveling musicians, minstrels, this is essentially their proper name, troubadours or trouvères, T-R-U-V-E with a little accent, R-E-S. But their songs were about war, chivalry, courtly love, stuff like that, and it's kind of cool because this is by far the most relevant piece of music history that we've talked about so far, because the minstrel is still just an idea that we like so much, you know? We like the idea of just like wandering musicians just living off the land and practicing their trade wherever they can.
I love that tradition. I love that tradition.
Oh, me too. I practice it every summer, trying to make money, failing horribly. Anyways, there's not much. I mean, they were really big in Portugal, Spain, Italy, and Northern Italy and Northern France. They started to wind down after the campaign by Pope Innocent III. To eliminate the Cathar heresy, they were a part of that. They were definitely victims of that as well. But that's where we started getting really the first couple of musicians who weren't talking about the church most of the time. I know, gasp, as if horror struck. You may release your breath. Okay, well that's the thing. I mean, I'm pretty much done at this point. That's pretty much all we got to cover. Next week is the late medieval music period, which covers 1300 to 1400, and I will also cover the transition to the Renaissance.
Oh, that's cool. That was pretty cool though.
All right.
I like the material that you supplied this week, Kieran.
And it really does.
It sounds like he's a robot.
I like your material, Kieran.
I like the material that you supplied this week.
I'm the male
Kieran.
Version of Gladys.
Okay. The cake was a lie.
Okay. Anyways, that's the end of the music history section. So.
Album
we are
reviews.
Going to cover. We covered three albums this week, as usual. And so the first that we are going to talk about, I guess I will start talking about this. The first one is Nicki Minaj's new release, her debut album called Pink Friday. And this album.
Wait. Do you think it was purposely released on the week of Black Friday?
Oh, absolutely.
I just found that too coincidental to be coincidental.
Of course it wasn't a coincidence.
And I didn't get it on sale.
You're right there. Alright, go ahead.
Okay, so anyways, Pink Friday, published on Cash Money Records. And I have very mixed feelings about this album. I read a review a little bit earlier this week, when it came out on, in the calendar section of the LA Times, on the dual release of Nicki Minaj's, album and also Kanye West's album, which we'll be talking about later. And they said, the one thing that they said that really stuck out to me is that this is most likely the start of a long and very successful career for Nicki Minaj. And in that respect, I absolutely agree. She's definitely got her finger on the pulse. She knows what she has to do to be extremely popular. You can definitely hear in some of the tracks her influence from Kanye and from Eminem, who's also another one of her big influences. But it was all very just...
samey.
It was a safe album.
Yeah.
I mean, she's not pushing the limits yet. And, you know, maybe she shouldn't yet. I mean, this is her first, you know, full-length album. Maybe she needed to just say, okay, look, this is what I can do.
It was her necessary evil, basically.
Yeah, this is the album that says, okay, look, I'm just as good as all of you other guys. Which is true. I mean, she's a good rapper. She's got some interesting ideas. But it was just...
it was very 2010.
Well, it came out in 2010, but...
I'm saying, if I were to look back 10 years from now and I listened to it, it would sound very 2010. It sounds like it came out this year. There was nothing new to it.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's just... It's going to be very successful because it's just like every other, you know... highlights a successful rap album out there.
And I feel that she really is battling with that. Ultimatum. Does she want to make her own name, or does she want to kind of go along the train that's already running?
Right, yeah, does she want to play it safe and be extremely successful, or does she want to, you know, be a pioneer? And I have high hopes for Nicki Minaj, because this album is good, but it's not great. There's nothing in there that is really like you stop and you're like, wow, that was
a great line. I find that a lot in the album. She just... if she can't find a whole line to rhyme with, she'll just find a rhyming word, like flat screen, and throw it in there.
Yeah.
It has no effect on the lyrics at all. It kind of degrades from the purpose and the...
She's in parts, it's sloppy.
Yeah.
Like you, yeah. You know what? Now that you mention it, that's absolutely true. Like when I was listening to it, I'm like, this doesn't make any sense, but not in a good way.
Yeah.
There were some good, really good tracks. Towards the end, I felt as though it got definitely stronger. But some of my favorite tracks off of it were, I really liked Super Bass, and I really liked the final track, Catch Me.
Okay.
Very kind of repetitive and just, it does, she's trying to deal, she doesn't know what she wants to talk about yet.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at Kid Cudi's album, he's talking about his journey and his and him dealing with society and his own problems. I mean, you look at an Eminem album, any Eminem album, and he's talking about, look, these are the screw-ups that I've made in my life. Don't make the same mistakes. With Nicki, it's like all over the map. She goes from being like, yeah, I'm just totally super fly and awesome.
To, I'm a normal girl. To, I hate you. To, yeah. I'm the worst girl in the world.
Yeah, to, why can't you love me? Like, and it's, I understand the need for variation, but there's no overall tone to the album, and that definitely detracts from it. It's good. I mean, if you like rap and you like hip hop, I mean, there's some stuff that she does that's really interesting. Whenever she brings in the ultimately that she does with her British accent, she's talking to herself. And by the way, Dakota, you were telling me that she's what is she, schizophrenic or something?
She has like a multi-personality disorder. That's what she claims to have, especially at a younger age, I guess. There were tough things that she had going for her in her life, and she used these multiple personas to find friends with herself, basically. And get over problems. And she says, I read in an interview probably 2 months back that in her album she was planning on going into more of like a introduction to each of these different personas that she has. Like, I know one of them was Roman, and one of them is Nicki Minaj, and there's one track specifically where she's singing to Nicki Minaj, and it sounds kind of weird.
Yeah.
But then taking the multiple personality disorder into context, that's an interesting twist, I think.
Yeah, it's an introspective album, but only in parts.
Yeah.
Like, the album itself is kind of multiple personality.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you look at it like that, where she's trying to say, these are the parts of myself that I've had to create, then in that sense it flows. It doesn't necessarily flow, but I mean it jumps beautifully.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting record. I'd recommend you at least give it a listen, just because, if only because she's definitely an up and coming talent.
She's made some great tracks with artists like Drake and now Kanye. She's actually on the Kanye album release this week as well, and her part on her little section in that album blew me away. Just her, that one verse she gave out in the track Monster for Twisted Fantasy was unbelievable.
Yeah,
it blew out the rest of the artists, including Jay-Z, I feel.
Oh yeah, she blew Jay-Z and Rick Ross out of the water on that.
Yeah.
She's definitely an excellent, excellent rapper, and she is, if she chooses to either, essentially she's got the talent where she can push the limits.
Right.
And I just really hope that she does.
All right.
Okay. And seeing as Anthony was a lady bum and did not take the time, or just did not have the time, to listen to all of the albums this week, and because Dakota is going to be dominating the last album review, I'll also start off the second one. Yes.
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 I guess the main reason Anthony hasn't been able to listen to the albums this week is he just started his job after moving up here this week, so he hasn't had much time. So
yeah, and
we'll cut him slack this week, Anthony. But next week he'll get back on the ball.
Exactly. Okay. So, the second album that we are talking about this week is the physical release of Royksopp's latest album called Senior. And this is a really interesting album. It's published on Walla Sound Records, like all of Royksopp's stuff. And it's really... It's intriguing. I'm a big fan of Royksopp. It's it's just always been described as kind of like warm, and that's absolutely true. It's very kind of it's electronic, but it's not like pulsing like angrily or really loud. It's just kind of
it's like a warm pulse, like a heartbeat almost, but like it doesn't it's not the repetitive dunk 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 dunk. It's
like it's music that's like your friend.
Yeah.
This album is completely instrumental.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, it felt almost as though it should be like the soundtrack for a Zelda-ish game. Like I could just imagine myself like in a forest, like going along and just like skipping through the forest and like going yeah and you know spinning.
I remember Zelda skipping through the forest now.
Oh well.
No,
I don't know.
Now you're just trying to make a gay version of Zelda.
But that's funny that you say in a forest because the first song on the album is "And the Forest Began to Sing."
Yes, and like that's exactly true. It's just it's so great. The entire album is really really good, and it definitely has. Great coherency.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a standout album.
No.
But if you like Royksopp, it's a good album. I mean, it's just like it's easy electronic listening.
It's a big step from their previous album, Junior. Yes,
yeah.
Junior, and then Senior. It's their fourth album, so it makes sense. But I wasn't a fan of Junior. I've listened to Royksopp since they came out. It's another one of those bands that my father got me into.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as I hear Senior or song from Senior, there's something distinct about their music that just breathes Royksopp.
Yeah.
I can't define it really. It's that warmth that you feel when you're listening to it. That distant yet very close synth beat along with the sampling of forest sounds and birds, and it just comes together really well, I think.
I actually got to hear like the first two tracks. The only reason why I'm not covering it is because I didn't hear the entire album, but like from what I did hear, like I do understand what they mean about it giving you that warmth. It honestly, I actually, from those first two tracks that I heard, it does give you a warmth, kind of like the warmth that I feel when I hear Sigur Rós.
Oh yeah.
It kind of gives me a Sigur Rós feel, even though it's not like a clone of Sigur Rós. It just has its own sound, kind of like, you know, Sigur Rós. It has like this, you know, synth, you know, this nice synth sound to it.
Yeah.
Where is Royksopp from, anyway? I'll go look that up now.
I have the page up. They're Norwegian.
Oh.
They're from Norway.
That makes sense.
Yeah, they're from a cold place, too.
The one difference between them and Sigur Rós that makes it so different is Sigur Rós, while it's very, you know, electronic and like that, Sigur Rós's music, I feel, has definitely some pain to it.
Mm-hmm.
And
Sigur Rós's music is much more emotional.
Yeah, that's true.
But that doesn't make Royksopp's, you know, inferior.
Any less. It's just Royksopp's is purely a happy feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like it, literally, if you were just kind of
happy
walking
all day
through the woods, walking through the woods on a bright, bright day, and there's just, you ain't got a care in the world. There were some really good tracks on that. I really liked The Alcoholic and The Drug.
Mm-hmm.
Those were fantastic. And by the way, the last track, the hidden track, terrified me.
Which one was that? A Long, Long Way?
No, there's a track after it.
What track is that? Maybe that was on the physical release. I have the digital release.
It's called The Hidden Track.
Oh.
Yeah, he said physical release earlier, so it might be on the physical release only.
Yeah, it's okay. like, it's like terrifying. It's like you're going to this like bright and cheery place, and like Satan pops up. It was
that sounds pretty scary.
It was pretty creepy. Like I was like out in the yard, like mowing the lawn, and like that comes on, and I look around and I'm like, uh-oh. Run. Get to the cellar.
Don't leave the lawnmower.
But it's a fun track. It's a fun album. And if you like Royksopp, you're gonna love the album. It's really good.
Yeah. The last album, Junior, was... It was more clubby. It was much more clubby.
More big beat?
Big beat, more like annoying singing, sampling artists that didn't need to be sampled.
Yeah.
And this is a great turn back to the roots, I feel. So, if you're a fan of Royksopp, please give it a listen. It's a good album.
Okay. Dakota, why don't you start us off, my friend?
I'm almost scared. I have so much to say. Okay. Kanye West's fifth album, produced by Rockefeller Records, entitled My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, has received universal acclaim by critics from all over the known universe. Well, not really, but it's by far his most praised work to date, which to me is very surprising. A lot of people, critics included, absolutely hate Kanye for his egotistical tendencies and his lack of thinking before he speaks, especially on live television. George Bush even claims that his personal worst blow during his presidency was when Kanye West publicly spoke out on live television and called him a racist. I don't know if you've seen that, Kieran. It was pretty funny. It was on.
I've not. That sounds hilarious, though.
It was during the Katrina catastrophe and how George Bush hadn't sent troops quick enough. He called him a racist. Anyway.
Oh, Kanye West. Somehow he turned it around.
Yeah. So, how is it possible that so many have kind of, like, forgiven him for his rude outbursts so drastically with this album? And I feel it could only be because it's a masterpiece. I've been really, really dissecting this album for the past week, and the pure symbolism that he put into each verse of each song kind of astounds me. I don't know where to be. I don't even know where to start discussing this album.
Start at the beginning.
I could start at the end, too, and explain the symbolism from each song up, and it would still feel so extremely coherent that it almost feels as though the order of the track list wouldn't make much of a difference if it were in any other order. Yeah. But I want to start with like his intentions as an artist for this album. About a month ago, before Twisted Fantasy came out, he told MTV, "I do have a goal in this lifetime to be the greatest artist of all time, but that's very difficult being that I can't dance or sing." This is a theme he secretly yet quite obviously imposes throughout his entire album. Yeah. Kanye realizes that if he can't win back the critics' acclaim with this album, he'll never have that chance again, and he'll never have the chance to be one of the greatest artists of all time. And I think no track better symbolizes that than the second track, Gorgeous.
Yeah.
In it, the opening chorus chants Kanye's personal thoughts on this next endeavor. "Ain't no question if I want it, I need it. I can feel it slowly drifting away from me. I'm on the edge, so why are you playing? I will never let you live this down. Not for nothing, I've foreseen it. I dream it. I can feel it slowly dripping away from me. No more chances. If you blow this, you bogus. I will never ever let you live this down." And there can be no other symbolic translation of these lyrics, as far as I can see, if you take into context of the rest of the album. But don't be mistaken, he realizes he can never be Michael Jackson or Beatles, but he wants to weed his way to that level. And the song continues to explain about his past endeavors in previous albums and how they've all led up to this. He mentions that he doesn't want to try to be a Beatle. He has to make his own path to fame somehow. He recites, I was looking at my resume, feeling real fresh today. They rewrite history, I don't believe in yesterday. And what's a black beetle anyway? A roach? But God said I need a new approach.
Such a great line.
And he continues to explain different ways he could approach this album, and this sets you up for quite an ambitious ride. And he explains his egocentric thoughts by exclaiming he's coming after whoever holds the belt for the greatest artist during this music scene of the 21st century, and asks the rhetorical, who has it? He knows that nobody, quote unquote, has it, but he also knows that makes it up for grabs, basically. He continues on this line of thought in the fifth track, All of the Lights, where he mentions that, to his surprise, someone's replacing him, and that he has to take him to that ghetto university. And I love that line because it's such a perfect touchback to Kanye's first three albums, the College Dropout, Late Registration, and Graduation, all themed around school and stuff.
The entire album, and by the way, if for those of you who are wondering, Dakota actually did go and write an essay on this album because it's so unbelievably, just there's so much to analyze, which is part of the reason that he's taking point on it. By far, the most powerful track for me was Blame Game.
Really?
Featuring John Legend. Oh my god, the last couple of minutes where they're just where he's just talking. Oh my god, like that, it was like scary, and but also like, nah, I can't describe it. I can't describe it why that part hit me so hard.
Yeah, I liked it, but it wasn't the biggest draw to the album for me.
Well, I mean, that's just, I don't think, it's not my favorite track, but it's certainly the one that, like, caught my attention the most, that had most power over me.
Easy top me.
Exactly. Like, just that again and again and again and again.
Yeah,
and
that was like, actually, alright, that was pretty good, actually.
I do have to admit that there is one song that I do like on that album, and that is Runaway, because I just
that's
like
my favorite, actually.
Yeah, that's that. I like that because of the beat in it. I'm not a huge Kanye West fan, but I do like that song though.
Mm-hmm. I honestly wasn't either. I actually didn't expect this, but he's got Bon Iver on two tracks.
Yeah.
That was a really interesting choice, I felt, especially on Lost in the World.
Mm-hmm.
Because, first, Bon Iver, if, for those of you who don't know, is an amazing acoustic, kind of a folk
Iver. Bon Iver.
It's Bon Iver?
Yes.
Okay, everybody I know pronounces it Bon Iver.
Wrong.
Okay, Bon Iver. Now, wait, learn something every day.
Anyway, I guess to further this notion of him trying to achieve that impossible status, that height of fame that he knows deep down that he'll never ever reach, he makes a few references to Michael Jackson and the Beatles throughout the album, like I mentioned, but most particularly Jackson's sixth album, Thriller. In the song All of the Lights, the first few lines of the initial verse include, "Something wrong, I hold my head. MJ gone, our brother dead." I changed the lyrics a little there, for the sake of keeping the podcast family friendly.
Ah.
But aside from that, those lyrics are extremely standout-ish for opening lines to a song.
Yeah.
And in the 12th track, he quotes a sample that Michael Jackson uses in Thriller, "Mama say, mama say, mamaku-san." And aside for these few uniquely placed lines throughout the album, a lot of My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy can easily be compared to Thriller. The opening of the album is just a simple poem that is almost frighteningly reminiscent of Vincent Price's vocals for Thriller. And instead of a guitar solo by Eddie Van Halen, Kanye mimics the effect of a guitar solo on Runaway with just his voice and a vocoder machine, distorting it enough so that, like, it employs the emotion the guitar can have on the listener, along with the tonal range of the human voice, suspending emotion and meaning one step higher. He also takes full advantage of sampling as much older music as possible, like the King Crimson on the third track.
Oh god, that was... I did not expect that, and that came in there, and I was like, wow. And it's perfectly, like, it's perfect for that track, Power.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I think he kind of wants to be a 21st century schizoid man.
He does.
And you know, we were talking also about Nicki Minaj's verse on Monster.
Right.
Because I'm not usually a big rap fan, and I just don't know. When on tracks where they've got, you know, a verse by, like, each of these artists, you know, like Monster and So Appalled, does Kanye help write that, or lyrics? Is it just pretty much them?
I honestly don't know, and I was thinking the same thing when I was listening to it. I'm sure he gives them a theme, and they go with it. I think he gives them a certain time allotted. Time allotted to their piece or whatever, but I don't know if he writes it completely for them.
I'd like to think that he doesn't, but that he does say, okay, look, this is the tone that I'm going for. This is what I'm trying to say.
Oh yeah.
So I people, this is a sonic opus. I don't think this is not slamming Kanye at all. I don't think he can do better.
No, I was gonna get to that, like at the end of my review. I feel as though it's just going to either level out over here or go steadily downhill.
I mean, if he can, like, the problem with doing an album this amazing is if he keeps it up, if he keeps up, you know, his trying to become the greatest artist ever, and I don't know what I'm trying to say. I guess I'm just trying to say I think that unless he can keep it as good as this,
as fresh as this,
and it can't just be My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy again.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be completely different, and I mean, very few, if any people have that much creativity in them.
Right.
I applaud him on creating, you know, probably one of the greatest hip hop albums of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really, really interested to know whether or not he can do it again.
Right. Yeah. And to go along with his musical palette and new approaches he's taken, there's one point in the album, I believe it was Hell of a Life, like, yeah, the cadence in his chorus, like, it's very it's reminiscent of Black Sabbath's Iron Man, of all things, and that kind of shows you that Twisted Fantasy is all over the place, like...
Yeah, I mean, he draws from everywhere.
Mm-hmm. And consistent with his overall domination of the musical scene theme he has going on, there's tracks like we talked about, Power and Monster, that really jump forward and backward a bit.
Mm-hmm.
In Power, he frequently reminds himself that no one man should have all that power, but the clock's ticking and I'm counting the hours. So he obviously realizes he can't or shouldn't be the best, but he's still waiting for it.
Yeah. I just want to know what you wrote down about the last track.
What was the last track?
Who Will Survive in America?
Who Will Survive in America? That was an interesting track. It was the second part of the Lost in the World song.
Yeah.
And the one thing I that really stuck out to me about Fools Arrive in America is the very end where you hear this, like, maybe it was like 2 seconds, 2 or 3 seconds of applause.
Yeah.
And I felt that that was such a perfect ending, even for Kanye, that I felt this was him telling himself that he had done the best he could do.
Yeah, I mean, there's a fine line. Like, I was thinking, like, as I was listening to that, like, as it finished up, I was thinking that some people would definitely take that the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wow, what an ass, he's applauding his own stuff.
No, I think that was a personal pat on the back.
Yeah, and if the album was any less, yeah, I'd be a little ticked at him.
Mm-hmm.
But this is easily his masterpiece, so it fits. And yes, people say that Kanye is, you know, egotistical and full of himself and stuff like that, but...
And he is. He's totally.
Yeah, but he also shows the side of himself that's a little bit scared, too, in this album. I mean, he talks about corruption and, he talks about how he's got his power, but he's scared of it.
Right.
And I think another amazingly powerful track is Lost in the World.
Oh yeah.
But just,
didn't that just remind you of when it started out, it sounded just like Imogen Heap's Hide and Seek.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I was like,
that's great.
Throwback.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely the effect that he was going for.
I'm sure, yeah. It didn't sound like the overused auto-tune. It was definitely a different program, but it was similar. But he employed Bon Iver for that album, or sorry, for that track, and it worked so perfectly. And then when the beat came in and all of that polyphony was so amazing.
Yeah. Buy it, everybody.
Yeah. And
buy that album.
About a month ago, he also created a music video for his song Runaway. Did you see that, Karen?
No, I really want to know that now, though.
All right. And Runaway is the most emotionally conflicting song in his new release, I feel.
Yeah.
Because it goes from very slow to very fast to self-degrading to... So self-glorifying to this beautiful guitar solo that he does with his voice, and I feel the song's all over the place, but it fits so perfectly in the center of the album.
Mm-hmm.
But the video was completely unconventional as music videos go nowadays. It's a 35-minute story-based video that.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's a 35-minute story-based video that has short segments of more of the songs in the album. It's a blatant attempt at a Michael Jackson music video. at one scene, there's even an erected effigy of Michael Jackson in plain sight, and it gives the video a little more symbolic depth.
Yeah.
And let me be the first to say I love the video, if only for the wonderful filmmaking techniques involved, but the acting is absolute junk, and should be skipped entirely.
Well, not everybody else is acting, just Kanye's.
Just Kanye's, yeah.
Oh, God.
Just stick to your producing.
Yeah.
No acting.
But overall, the video sets you up for the album really well, and it was a good thing that he released it before his album, I feel.
Yeah.
One thing I noticed, though, whereas Michael Jackson employed others to direct his videos, Kanye took all the liberty and did it himself, out of his pocket, no doubt. And I have great respect for that, simply because the cinematography was unbelievable. And anyway, the first line in the video and the album is, "I fantasized about this back in Chicago." And I feel that this could, like, be, this could mean so many possible conclusions, like, what's he fantasizing about? One could be about making this video a reality, or that this whole fantasy of his was this grandiose plan of conquering the music scene long ago before he even started in rapping, and that this album, along with the video, is the amalgamation of this dream, basically.
Yeah, nice use of the word amalgamation.
Thank you. Anyway, and in the same song he asks himself, can we get much higher? And I think only time will tell, really.
Yeah, that's, and we already know the review, we know how this album is received, and now we just gotta see where he goes.
Yeah, and as ambitious as Twisted Fantasy is, it doesn't really come off that way, and that's what truly makes it great. You may not like Kanye as a rapper, or may not find much to like in his new album, but one thing's certain, it is a great album, and it deserves the as many good reviews as it did get. Like I mentioned, it got universal acclaim. This means that every major critic around the world gave it a positive rating.
Yeah.
In fact, Pitchfork.com, which I respect highly, the albums they review highly are generally amazing albums. And this is the first time I've seen in over 5 years that they've given an album a perfect 10. And that's...
Wow.
That's... I logged onto the computer that day, and I was just like, what?
Exactly like that?
Yeah. Ask Anthony.
Anthony?
Yeah, is that kind of... I was surprised myself, because Pitchfork, the only time that they give something a 10 is when it's a re-release.
Usually, yeah. And I'm pretty sure this did not come out before this week.
Maybe it's a secret album.
Maybe. But this isn't a children's album in the slightest. Much of the lyrics and themes are meant for particularly jaded ears.
And also just mature audiences.
Audience, jaded ears.
I do have to admit, though, that, you know, I'm not, you know, into the whole, you know, rapping about, you know, sex and all that stuff, but this album does have more depth to it than a lot of other rap albums. And, you know, this does have, you know, a dark thing to it. You know, although out of all the mainstream artists, you know, Kid Cudi will be my favorite, I do have to admit that this album is, you know, it does have a level of darkness to it, kind of like, you know, what Kid Cudi does.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's ultimately where I think he loses audience, is his themes and his profanity, and that hurts him in his chance at becoming the greatest artist of all time. Michael Jackson never made had that sinister of lyrics in his music, or same with the Beatles. But and it isn't his inability to sing or dance, like he mentioned in the MTV music video, that will stop him from being the greatest artist of all time. It's his own outbursts, his own thinking before he acts.
Yeah.
Or
acting before he acts. Thinks.
Acting before he thinks. Sorry.
Wait, what? Wow, I just agreed to that. I'm really out of it.
Kieran, don't sink to a lower level of intelligence.
Not because of me, especially. Anyway, there are a few exceptions to the album where I felt there were low points. Like, I did not like the song "Devil in a New Dress."
And that was it's not that I didn't like it. It just didn't do anything special for me.
I got really annoyed by the singing in the background.
It didn't give you a cookie.
It did not give me any cookies whatsoever. listeners, you may interpret that as you will.
And what was it? So Appalled. I love that song, except for the chorus in the very beginning, and it goes in between each different rapper. Like, one hand in the air, if you don't really care. I hate that. That doesn't even make sense.
It's kind of like one of those, like, old-school dumb raps, right? It kind of reminds you of it.
It just felt stupid and...
Yeah, stupid. Yeah, I'm not big on songs that do that either.
But overall, So Appalled was an unbelievable track, and some of the beats behind it and
okay.
And stuff were great.
We're going in circles.
Yeah, so. All right. So. It was a great album. I loved it.
Yes, we can tell. Let's move on.
All right, on to the RORs.
On to the next one.
So, Dakota, seeing as you've been starting us off, why don't you start us off, my friend?
Have I really? All right.
Yeah, every week.
My album of the week, my record of remembrance, is Death Cab for Cutie's Plans.
Yes!
It was them that got me into listening to music. On a more emotional level, and a more critical level. It was when I first moved to from Miami to California, and I remember my father was taking us to spot stars with his new telescope that he had gotten from work. And we were just driving up in his Land Rover, and there's a sunroof, and I'm seeing all these stars in the sky, and it was the middle of the night, and he puts on Plans, and the first song, Marching Bands of Manhattan, comes on, and
oh, that's a great song.
And the imagery in that song just makes you smile.
That sets you up. It
sets you up for an amazing album.
If you've never heard the album, I'm sure you have, and you just don't know it. If you haven't heard any other track, you have heard, of course, the most famous and probably one of the most amazing pieces of songwriting ever, in my opinion. I Will Follow You Into the Dark.
Oh my gosh.
I am an emotional person, and I am not ashamed to admit that I have openly sobbed when I've listened to that song.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally.
Right. Yeah, it takes you to a dark place that you almost want to go again and again.
Yeah.
It produces emotions within you that don't necessarily exist, but you feel them anyway.
Yeah, I mean... I don't have a connection with the entire album, otherwise this would be definitely one of my RORs.
Mm-hmm.
But the entire album is just, it is dark.
Right.
But it's a dark where, you know, it's saying, don't be afraid of the dark that I'm showing you.
Okay.
Because it's okay, because I'm here. Brilliant.
It is.
Great choice.
All right, who's next?
That would be me. My album is the album Nashville by the artist Josh Rouse.
Mm.
And I don't know if you guys have heard this album.
I haven't. Yet. I haven't, honestly.
It is a fantastic album, and it's essentially... It is just about being, like, a musician in love. And it's so, and so, of course, because I am a hopeless romantic, the songs on that album just, and the album in general just so resonate with me. The opening track, It's the Nighttime, is this song that Josh Ross is singing, to his love interest, and it's the nighttime, baby. Don't let go of my love. And like that's the refrain. And it's just it's folk. Josh Rouse is pretty much as close to country as I can possibly get. But he's just, his lyrics are so great. So many songs on the album, from like Winter in the Hamptons, Saturday. Ah, Saturday is so great. That is absolutely about him as a musician, just wishing that he could be home. And he's a Saturday. I'm on that stage and I'm feeling down and blue. Yes, because Saturday, I'm not on that plane, not flying home to you. And it's about sacrifice, and the final track, especially Life, is just, it's so perfect. The entire album is it's great, and it's a happy yet bittersweet little album, and it's absolutely shaped who I am today.
All right, I gotta listen to that now.
Yeah, definitely.
That sounds like an album that'll put you to sleep.
Yes, it makes you feel just okay with everything.
That's good.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Anthony, yours, my friend.
All right. My ROR this week is an album called "Walking on a Dream" by Empire of the Sun.
Excellent.
This group is great, and I think that a lot of people would like them if you've never heard of them. This is the only album that they have right now, but they're pretty much equivalent to MGMT. Although they have their own sound, they don't sound just like MGMT, but they have just this odd sound to them. And if you see their music videos, they are pretty much along the lines of weird music videos that just like MGMT. I love the song, We Are the People. It's just a great song. It's, you know, it pretty much, you know, puts power into, like, you know, the general population. And, it's pretty cool. Also, I like Half Mast. They all have great beats, like, you know, and
I feel Empire of the Sun is a little more cultured than MGMT.
Yeah, definitely. They're definitely more cultured. Yeah, like I said, they're not exact clones, but they're close cousins.
They're both members of the band Sleepy Jackson, which is 90s, early 2000s band. I don't know if they're still together actually, but they created a completely new sound with Empire of the Sun. And it's a definite listen, Walking on Dreams.
Empire of the Sun, it doesn't have any special real significance for me, but it's absolutely a great album.
Yeah.
You guys should definitely go ahead and give it a listen. That's a good choice, Anthony.
For sure.
That pretty much closes out this episode. We kind of blazed through those RORs just to make sure we had enough time left.
Yeah.
So anyways, I suppose we can look ahead to next week a little bit, as we usually do. As I said earlier, the music history section will be the late medieval music period, which is very interesting, and that's actually going to be a little bit longer than this week's, because there's just some good stuff to cover.
All right.
In terms of albums, we haven't really talked about this, but I'd really like to cover the Black Eyed Peas new release.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking about that too. I think we all agree that we like Black Eyed Peas.
Honestly, yeah. Like, I do, I really do. I really liked The End. I thought that was a great album.
Yeah, it was a great album.
And I'm really interested to see what they're going to do with The Beginning. But we don't really have anything else.
Yeah, we'll figure it out by next week, so yeah, don't worry, we'll have something for you.
Next week, we'll have a song analysis, too.
All right.
Yes.
Anthony has promised.
Yeah, we promise, definitely.
So, once again, don't forget, we would gladly like to invite you to...
Donate,
yeah.
Of your time and money.
It's
a free podcast, and we know not all of our listeners can afford it, and we're fine with that. As long as you let us know you like it, we're cool.
Yeah, we're not trying to beg for cash or anything. We're just saying that it helps
It helps with
the ad campaign and, you know,
the likes.
You know, and doing a podcast, that, you know, it does take some sort of money.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like we gotta, you know, pay for new releases and get stuff and we just passed Thanksgiving and on Thanksgiving, I mean, one of the things I was really thinking that I was thankful for, among, you know, like good health and everything that's so great in my life, is that you crazy music aficionados tune in every week to listen to us ramble for an hour. If you guys are tuning in again and again, you must like it. And if you do like it, like we said, tell your friends, donate if you can.
Yeah.
But just get the word out, because we'd really like to see the Sonic Opus go somewhere.
Yeah.
And it's all up to you guys.
We really get excited, though, when we see... Oh.
All right. So I think that's it.
Okay. Thank you guys for tuning in. Until next week, you've been listening to the Sonic Opus, which consists of Kieran Newton,
Dakota Lopez,
and Anthony Gunch.
So we will see you guys later.
Bye-bye.